and welcome back to Our American Queen. I'm Erin.
And I'm Emily.
And today we're going to be discussing Red, Taylor's version. So I guess today we're going to be talking about our initial impressions of the album. And now that we're almost a week out from the release date, just how we're feeling about it. We'll talk a little bit about its success, which is
monumental.
Way more than I think I predicted, than Emily predicted. It's been record-breaking, to say the least. So we'll be breaking down those stats a little bit and just kind of predicting where Taylor goes next from here, because as we all know, it could be anywhere.
Yeah. So this release broke so many records. It's all over the internet, it's all over TikTok, it's everywhere you look, honestly, and it's really hard to believe even Adele dropped her album last week, and still it's dominating the news cycle, even though, you know, Adele got her due in the media as well, but
yeah,
a lot of people predicted that once Adele's album came, it would kind of stop, but it hasn't really stopped.
No, it has not, and I actually just realized that I said we're almost a week away. I meant we're almost 2 weeks away, which is crazier because when you think about it, I thought we were only a week away from the release because it's been so prominent, I guess, in just
pop culture.
Yeah, pop culture, social media, everything like that, which is honestly so impressive considering that this is an album
that's almost 10 years old.
Yes, and that most of it is something that everyone's heard before, which is kind of what we've touched on in the past, thinking maybe this project wouldn't be that exciting for the general public, fans of, or people who are not fans of Taylor, just maybe would be indifferent toward this project.
You thought that the general public wouldn't care.
It seems like I was completely proven wrong. And they do care. They care a lot. They care so much that Taylor broke the record for the amount of streams for an album in one day or something for a female artist. So it is huge, and it's just very exciting that something that means so much to Taylor.
And so much to the fans.
Yeah, and so much to the fans, owning her music, re-recording it so that it is now solely in her possession, that it's just something that's exciting for everyone else also. So with all that said, let's start by breaking down the album. Let's talk about our favorite tracks, our least favorite tracks, the ones we think improved the most, the ones that were consistent, the ones that were harmed by the re-recording process. Let's just break it down. So Emily, why don't you start us out?
Yeah, I feel a lot more qualified now to talk about the album now that it's been 2 weeks, and my thoughts have definitely changed a lot since it dropped. Yeah, when I first listened to the album, I will say I wasn't as impressed as I am now 2 weeks later, and a lot of my opinions have changed for sure. I touched on this in our last episode, but when I first heard the Girl at Home remix sort of deal, I really didn't like it at all, and I never expected to listen to it again, but it really has grown on me a lot.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I was definitely very surprised by the new twist that was put on Girl at Home, but I do think that it ultimately makes the song better, and I think I said this in the last episode, it's really not my favorite Taylor song, so I don't listen to it much anyway, but I do agree that this version is an improvement, I would say.
Did you see that all of the songs charted on the Hot 100 except for Girl at Home and Ronin?
I did see that, and I think probably, which is sort of what I was thinking, Girl at Home I would say probably didn't, because it's like the last track on the album, like the not a bonus track. Well, I guess that's not true.
It is State a bonus
of,
track.
But State of Grace. But I mean something that we haven't heard before from the vault. Before the vault.
With this release, people really, really clung on to the Jake Gyllenhaal narrative.
Yes.
And that one, as far as we know, isn't about him. Because it's like the moment I knew ties into the 10 minute All Too Well. So it makes sense why people were listening to that.
Yeah. And I will also point out that Girl at Home and Ronin are the two final songs before the vault tracks, because that doesn't include the State of Grace acoustic version. I saw that is the acoustic version of State of Grace is tied in with the State of Grace original songs. So those are one. So those are the last two tracks before The Vault. So that also kind of makes sense. It's a long album. Probably by the time it got to that song, people had to move on with their day.
All right, so let's quickly touch on first, because I think this will take a shorter amount of time. Let's quickly touch on the just standard version re-records and our thoughts on any particular song.
Yes.
I'll personally start. Okay. I was in my feels the other night, and I listened to Sad, Beautiful, Tragic, the re-record, like 4 times in a row, and it is so good.
Yeah, and that, I don't know if I said this on the podcast, I definitely thought it in my head that that song in particular would be improved a lot because, I don't know, it kind of reminds me of a Folklore or Evermore yeah. track in a way. So I feel like Taylor's voice now, which we all know,
has improved.
I think that the mature and almost assured and confident quality that Taylor has in her voice now really is a good match for Sad, Beautiful, Tragic. And I agree that that song sounds amazing in the re-recorded
That's always been
version.
One of my favorite songs on Red. So, yes. Yeah, like you said, her mature voice definitely suits it very well now. And also, when the album first came out, I wasn't crazy about The Last Time.
Mm-hmm.
But I did listen to that one the other night as well, and I really liked that one too.
Yeah, I feel like Taylor herself sounds pretty much the same in that song. I did find that Gary Lightbody kind of sounded different.
I would love to know the inner workings of that, if she was like, do whatever you want, or if she was like, let's stay close to the original, because it seems like he towed the line a little bit.
I mean,
between experimenting and staying the same.
With Ed, Ed Sheeran on Everything Has Changed, she must have told him to stick with it, because he even said, good to go, in the beginning of that yeah. one. So that was very consistent. I'll talk about I Almost Do, because that's my favorite song off of Red. And I noticed a few differences in I Almost Do, just very subtle differences, like with the guitar and maybe with the melody, just a slight change. I can't really say whether I feel like it's for the better or for the worse. I just think it's slightly different. It's almost not noticeable, but it sounded really, really good. And I think that was another song that, being recorded a few years after the original, Taylor's voice, like I said, the confident quality that it has now that maybe it didn't when she recorded the original album, really works well on that song.
I feel like a lot of the songs on Red do have a very mature quality about them, and the songwriting is, I guess it is about the age that she was, but it does skew a little older in some of the songs, like something mm-hmm. like I Almost Do, or Sad, Beautiful, Tragic, she could definitely write today, and it would fit her current age.
Yeah, I agree with that. The other song that I want to mention is State of Grace, acoustic version, because that one is so beautiful and I love it so much. I think it sounds amazing. And I was highly anticipating that song in particular off Red Taylor's version because I just knew that it was going to sound so good and I was not disappointed at all.
Also, Red sounds pretty much exact from the original version, which is crazy that she could get it that close.
Yes.
Yeah, I think most of them sound pretty much the same.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say. This is sort of a conversation for people who are familiar with the original album and listen to it all the time. I think if somebody who wasn't familiar was given the two tracks put together, you probably wouldn't even be able to tell they were different. And also, I was listening to the album in the car, and I was in the car with some friends. We were talking, just kind of like having a conversation with it on in the background. There's no way I would know that it's,
yeah.
it's a different album. When it's on in the background like that, it sounds exactly the same, and I don't think I would be able to tell.
I don't like the re-record of Treacherous, I have to say. I don't like the new drums in that one.
Yeah.
And then the new Begin Again doesn't have the same emotion for me as the original.
Mm-hmm.
And then we touched on this as well in our last episode, but We Are Never Getting Back Together.
Yeah.
It was a choice.
It's not great. I mean, it's fine. We all know the wheeze in the chorus that sound like a baby choir. It's kind of strange.
It gets the job done, but it's not good.
Yeah, and I kind of feel the same way about all the other big songs on Red, like 22 and oh, yeah. I Knew You Were Trouble.
22 sounds kind of hollow.
They all do. Those three songs to me do sound kind of hollow. Just, you know, not quite like the original. They don't hit quite the same.
Do you want to get into the Max Martin thing?
Yeah.
Like, if we want to speculate if he'll come back.
Yeah, because that's, he and Shellback produced these tracks, these big hits of Taylor's.
And I think Shellback came back.
He did.
Shellback came back.
He came back. Max Martin did not. And some people were wondering if maybe that's why the songs didn't sound quite the same. I read that he has a very particular way of producing, and it's basically impossible to recreate because he's so particular and so meticulous in the way that he produces things. So I can see that that might have an impact on the way that these new version sound. And do you want to get into why he might not have been
a part lot of this? People think that 1989 was supposed to come out this summer. There was a lot of signs that were pointing to that. There was that merch drop that said like 1989, TS 1989.
And it would have made sense.
And it would have made sense with the dress that she wore at the Brit Awards. It was very 1989. But there is something going on with Max Martin. We don't know if it's we don't know if it's legal. We don't know if it's the price that he charges, which is apparently a lot. And Taylor didn't want to put that much into it because it is a re-recording and it's not an original piece of music. So I don't know if she would want to put that much money into it again. So we don't know what the deal is with him, but many people believe that 1989 was supposed to come out this summer.
Yeah, so there are a lot of reasons he might not have worked on Red with Taylor. I hope that she's able to get him back for 1989 because, like we said, it does kind of seem like he may be the reason that those big tracks, We Are Never Getting Back Together, I Knew You Were Trouble, songs like that did suffer a little bit from the re-recording. But that doesn't quite matter because iHeartRadio came out with a statement that they are going to replace all of Taylor's songs with the Taylor's version of them. So they will not be playing any songs that Taylor does not own, which I think is very cool.
But yeah, you would think that Taylor would want to put extra work into her biggest hits and her biggest singles, because those are the things that are going to be played in commercials and movies and things like that for the rest of time.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, and at the same time, I agree with that, but they do sound close enough that I think it's probably good.
So really it's like the mixing? I don't know.
I don't know enough about music or producing to really say, but I just know that to my ear it sounded a little bit off. Okay, so then let's get into the vault tracks, which are...
Are you ready to open up the vault?
Yeah, so let's open up the vault. As a refresher, it's Better Man, Nothing New, Babe, Message in a Bottle, I Bet You Think About Me. Oh, I should say Nothing New featuring Phoebe Bridgers, I Bet You Think About Me featuring Chris Stapleton, Forever Winter, Run featuring Ed Sheeran, The Very First Night, and All Too Well, 10-minute version.
Which got all the traction on this album.
Yes, and just hit number one on the Billboard Hot 100 chart, breaking the record for the longest song that's ever been number one on that chart. But as we know, Taylor is the music industry, so who's surprised at this point? I guess I'm not.
Yeah. Okay, so the first song is Better Man. Like we said in our Vault prediction episode, I am not a fan of Better Man, so I don't really listen to this. And yeah. It's about what I thought it would be.
Yeah, I like it, and it sounds good. Like you said, it's not something I listen to on a regular basis, if at all. And I listened to it once, I believe, and I liked it. I thought it sounded really good. Taylor sounded great. Not something I'm going to put into my rotation, I don't think. I just I don't know, there's, I should probably listen to it more. Maybe I'll like it if I listen to it more. I think it just needs to grow on me.
Yeah.
Okay, so the next one is Nothing New. Yeah. Featuring Phoebe Bridgers.
So this song is exactly what we predicted it to be. Yep. It's very sad.
Yeah. I think it is, it kind of gives an insight, I guess, into Taylor's headspace. That she was thinking about these things when she was 22. And it really does demonstrate how young she was when she first started. Because at that point, when she was 22, she was already, what, like 6-7 years into her career? So, I mean, that's just like... And she
had already won Album of the Year.
Yeah, that's hard to wrap your head around that this 22-year-old young woman who, by like all accounts, is still so young... was like, I'm pretty much aged out, like, this is it for me, I've reached my peak, like, it's all downhill from here, which is obviously not true, because she's 10 years later, almost 32.
She says in that one scene in Miss Americana, when they're filming the Me music video, when she's in the suit,
mm-hmm.
and she gets in her head about filming that, and doesn't she say women are in a, she calls it an elephant graveyard by the time they're 35? Yeah. Female artists.
Yeah.
So that's definitely something that's on her mind, obviously, and something that she worries about.
Yes, but it's just what I'm kind of trying to say is that it's wild to think that she was worrying about that at 22, because I understand and it makes sense. It is true that, like, once you're that far into your career, I feel like people do tend to want to discard you because they're sick of you. But to have that happen when you're 22 is just so young. But
well, it's society, it's yeah. the music industry, it's women in general and women in entertainment, especially when you're under 35, that's like when you're considered in your quote prime, maybe not even 35, probably like under 30.
Yeah, that's true. But
so she probably had a lot of pressure on her from management and stuff like that, and she knew that someday her time would come when she wasn't as relevant.
Yeah, but the good news is that almost 10 years later, I would argue that Taylor is just as relevant, if not more relevant.
No, she's more relevant.
Yeah, than she was at the time. So it's kind of sad in the sense that you wish you could go back and tell her that she didn't need to worry about that, because she still had 10 years and I'm sure many, many, many more years of great success. But it's definitely a good insight into her headspace, like I said. And I think she and Phoebe Bridgers sounded really beautiful together. And I'm glad that she gave her a verse.
They really sounded absolutely beautiful together. It's just, that's like my kind of music.
Mm-hmm.
I love Phoebe Bridgers, so. And it was one of the things that stuck out to me the first time I listened to it was when she said, I've had too much to drink tonight.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, wow, because back then, she was still in her good girl kind of phase. So it's interesting to look back now and be like, there's no way she could have ever released that back then. She would never talk about drinking, even though she was over 21. That's, do we want to talk about the bridge and what people are talking about?
Yeah, we can get into that.
Okay, so the bridge is, I know someday I'm going to meet her. It's a fever dream, the kind of radiance you only have at 17. She'll know the way, and then she'll say she got the map from me. I'll say I'm happy for her, but then I'll cry myself to sleep.
Yes, and there has been speculation that Taylor wrote that bridge recently, perhaps after aiming it specifically at Olivia Rodrigo, because it does happen to line up with their... situation, I guess you could call it, quite well. She was 17 when she met her, and she is a huge fan of Taylor and basically said that Taylor inspired her career. So there are some pretty clear parallels between those lyrics and Olivia's career. But however, maybe Taylor is just a fortune teller in addition to everything else. I don't know. What do you think, Emily?
Yeah, I definitely think she wrote this 10 years ago.
The bridge?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think for sure. I don't think she would do that now, honestly.
You don't?
No, I think she wrote it 10 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. I think she knew the pattern of the music industry, and she knew the pattern of the entertainment industry, and she knew that there would be girls after her that say they were inspired by her. And by the time that they were 17, she'd be older, and she was terrified of that. I think it fits in with the song perfectly, the rest of it.
It does.
Because through the whole song, she's ramping up to it, basically, mm-hmm. by saying all of her fear about aging and aging out. You know, it's all about age, basically, the song. So mm-hmm. it makes sense that the climax of the song would be about that.
Yeah.
Meeting somebody who's much younger than her, who is just starting out.
Yeah, and again, I don't even think the song is about age so much as it is the fact that Taylor was so far into her career at the time. Because if she started out when she was 22, I don't think, you know what I'm saying? Like, she was so young when she started out, so by the time she was 22, her career was already so deep, and that's why this song came about. I don't know if it was as much about her being 22 and, oh my God, that's so old, but just the idea that she's already so far into her career and people will be sick of her because she's nothing new.
Yeah, I think it is mostly about age, though. When it's like they tell you when you're young, girls go out and have your fun. Lord, what will become of me once I've lost my novelty? I think it's a mix of both of what we're saying.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just sitting here thinking 22.
And then it's like, how long will it be cute, all this crying in my room when you can't blame it on my youth?
Yeah, I think
people love an ingenue. It's basic. I think a lot of it is her being scared about being replaced.
Yeah, definitely. And I think she has a warped sense of time, maybe, and age, because
she said she got frozen.
Yeah, because 22 is, by all accounts, like I said, very young. So to act as though, like, your life is over at 22 is a little bit.
But just think about from the time she was.
No, I totally understand.
Like, no, I'm not fighting you. I'm just saying. Just think about the times since she was probably 14 or 15, she was around all adults.
Mm-hmm.
It's like all the kids in the entertainment industry who have to grow up a lot faster.
Yeah. I can't even imagine how. I don't even want to imagine it. It's just weird to think about how her life has been. Like, she must feel
like she's 70.
Yeah, she's lived like 20 lives and she's only 30, almost 32. Yeah. So anyway, it's just a very layered song. And I think it's beautiful. And
there's a lot of haunting to it.
Yeah, and kind of sad, but.
So do you think the bridge is about Olivia, like, written now, or?
I don't know. It's just so on the nose that it's hard because it's, like, it matches her perfectly. And I do believe that Taylor had these songs written, of course. Like, I don't think she just wrote them all now.
She had it in the Lover Diary.
Yeah, and I do think she had them all written. But when she returned to them for the vault, I kind of buy into the idea that she cleaned them up a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't think they're exactly as they were written almost 10 years ago. I think she might have tweaked a few things, maybe added a few lyrics here and there. But we'll talk more about that when we get into the All Too Well 10-minute version, because that's a song that people definitely believe parts were written recently. All right, so let's move on to Babe.
Yeah, so Babe is one that I really, really, really like a lot.
Yeah, me too. And I think that I mentioned this in maybe the last episode we did. I don't listen to the Sugarland version of Babe really ever. I like the song itself. I don't dislike the song. Not the biggest fan of the vocals of Sugarland. So having Taylor sing it, for me, improved the listening experience just because, you know, some voices mesh better with people than others. And I do really, really like the way that she did the song. And I believe Jack Antonoff produced this one.
Yep.
I feel like you can definitely hear his influence in it. And I really enjoy it a lot.
It kind of reminds me of all the 2000s revivals that are going on with music right now. Like, the production of this reminds me of something that could be on Kacey Musgraves' new album, Starcrossed. It's mm-hmm. that, like, early 2000s vibe and, like, Olivia Rodrigo.
I think it's better than Kacey Musgraves' album.
Yeah, we don't have to get into that right now. But, Yeah, so there's not that much to say about that one.
Yeah,
I just really, really, really like it. And I added it to a playlist. It's like that kind of song.
Yep, I am a big fan of Babe Taylor's version from The Vault.
What about your Promises, Promises?
Yeah, that's a fun addition. I think I've seen like a little debate on that. People don't like it. I like it. I think it's fun. It's cute. Not that the song is cute, but anyway.
It's not at all.
So the next one is, it's going to get a little controversial, I think, because the next song from The Vault is Message in a Bottle. And this one I have been going back and forth on. I've been listening to it, trying to decide my opinion on it. I listened to it again this morning. My opinion is settled. I do not like this song.
I've seen a lot of people say that it sounds like a Barbie movie song, and that's a perfect description of it.
Yeah, I find it, I hate to say it, it sounds harsh. I find it a little annoying. It's a little grating to me. I'm just not a fan of it at all. And I know that that's like a little controversial because I've seen a lot of people who love it and it's like their favorite Vault track and they just are obsessed. But I don't like it, I have to say. I've made up my mind.
Yeah, I don't really get it that much, really. The songwriting on it is very basic to me, which is, you know, it's kind of strange considering it's a Max Martin, Shellback, and Taylor Swift song. You'd think they would have knocked it out of the park, but I definitely see why it was left off the original album, for sure.
Oh yeah, definitely. And for me, it's not even so much about the lyrics, it's just the way it sounds. Like, it's so grating to me. And the part at the beginning, it's like, and da 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 da, and da. Like, I just don't like it. I don't know.
I've seen people say that it sounds like a Carly Rae Jepsen song of her album Emotion, and I could definitely see that. And honestly, I think she would have done it better. It fits her vibe a lot more.
Well, see, I don't really like her songs that much, so there you go. It's just not my style, which is fine.
It sounds like a Carly Rae Jepsen song.
Yeah, that kind of style I feel like isn't for everyone. It's not for me. I'm not the biggest fan of it, but that's okay. I'm not going to love every single Taylor song, so it's what it is. Do you have anything else to say about it?
What do you think of the lyrics of it when she says, I'm terrified, disaster, like all of that?
I don't even know. I've probably only listened to it all the way through a couple times. Let me pull up the lyrics because, like I said, it's not one that I gravitate toward.
I will say that that one part in it is very cute when it's talking about the days are endless, replaying your laughter. That part is cute.
I will give it to Taylor. The song's very catchy. Like, I've only listened to it a few times, but I already, like, know the entire chorus, and it does get stuck in your head. Okay, so I know that you like me. It's kind of frightening standing here waiting, waiting, and I become hypnotized by freckles and bright eyes. I'm reaching for you, terrified, because you could be the one that I love. I don't know. I almost feel like this song is about the same person Come Back, Be Here is about, especially the reference to London. How is it in London? Where were you while I'm wondering if I'll ever see you again? So when you put it together with that song, I think it kind of makes more sense, where it's like she had a connection with somebody.
Yeah, and she's falling and she might not see them again.
Yeah, and then they left and now they're like too far away to really do anything about it. So it's just kind of like a lost connection. You're never going to see what's going to happen with it. So it's like, I wish that I could send you a message in a bottle so you know how I feel, like that kind of a thing.
I think it was the night before Red TV came out. Taylor went on TikTok and somebody was like, oh, message in a bottle. I think they predicted it would be a bop or something. And she commented like, oh, it's a huge bop. So my expectations for it were very high, especially when I saw Max Martin wrote it. And it just kind of fell flat for me, but I've seen tons and tons of people love it, so.
Yeah, I do like the connection between Come Back, Be Here, because I see it. I feel like it probably is about the same person.
Yeah, and that's part of the fun with the Vault tracks, because you can see more connections between music that you've been listening to for so long, and you get new lyrics about the same situations that you've been hearing about for so long, and if you hear a buzzword, you can make a connection.
Yeah, Definitely. And there is just that sort of concept or trope, whatever you want to call it, that's like, it's fun. It's in so many books, so many movies where it's like two people have this big connection, but then one of the people is like, I have to leave, I gotta go, like, we can't do anything about this, like, I'm out of here, we're gonna be away from each other, we're never gonna know what could be. So that concept is kind of fun, I guess.
Yeah.
All right, so the next track after Message in a Bottle, I Bet You Think About Me, featuring Chris Stapleton.
Okay, I've changed my tune on this one. I believe now it is my favorite of the Vault tracks.
Mm-hmm.
Because yeah. I think it's so relatable to so many people. Like, you know, in this case, you know a guy like this. And it's so funny how Taylor outlines that kind of person so well.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Like the organic shoes, you're reading books about the meaning of life, you're talking about the meaning of life, you're so cool.
Well, and it's that, your organic shoes and all this, but yet you have the $1 million couch and you're like kind of a fake.
Yeah.
Just basically fake in every way.
I love it.
And this song got the music video treatment, which was very exciting and very out of the blue. And we can talk a little bit about that, which was...
I want to talk more about the lyrics, though, first. I think this song has such great lyrics. And what did you think of the Chris Stapleton feature?
Yeah, he got the, like, Barely There
He got the woman treatment.
He got the Taylor's features with women treatment, where they're barely there. I think it's kind of hard to say because he was, like, very much in the background and... You almost don't really notice he's there. You kind of have to be, like, listening for it in a way.
Yeah.
I think they sound nice together.
Mm-hmm.
I could take or leave it.
That one part in the beginning of the song, and I'll bet your friends tell you she's better than me, and then that little, like, is so addicting.
She loves doing that kind of thing.
And then the music just, like, swells at that point. I love it so much.
Mm-hmm.
And then... When you realized I'm harder to forget than I was to leave is so good. And I bet you think about me.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And Taylor was actually raised in a mansion.
Yeah.
Because when we were talking about the Inner Circle's description of this song, we were like, oh, it'll probably be fake. It'll be like folklore. But no, she's talking about herself.
Yes, definitely her personal experience. I don't really care. I know some, I did see, like, some people were like, oh, Taylor, like, she grew up rich, like, this is so fake. But I think for the purpose of the song, it's fine. Like, I don't think it's that deep. What I find interesting about this song is that you could say the subject material is sort of similar to I Almost Do. However, the mood of the two songs and the mood of the lyrics couldn't be more different. It's like on opposite spectrums where I Bet You Think About Me, the mood is very like emo almost and just kind of like melancholy, like, oh, I bet you're sitting by the window, you're looking out at the city, you're thinking about me, I wish I could call you, like all that kind of longing. Whereas I Bet You Think About Me is more like, ha ha ha, like look what you let go, like I bet you think about me.
I know,
like,
I love
you made
it.
A big mistake, like it's sort of similar, but it couldn't be more different of a mood, which I think is kind of fun.
Yeah, and it's just so relatable because that is something that you go through when you break up with someone where at first I think a lot of people fall into like that emo part of it. But then as you go further along, you're like, wait, why did I like even like them? Like I'm laughing at myself crying over them.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's kind of what that song represents, where she's like, no, you kind of are a joke.
Yeah. So I love getting the other side of I Almost Do. And that's kind of like what we were saying with Message in a Bottle, where it's kind of tied to, or at least it seems like it's tied to Come Back, Be Here. And this one seems like it's tied to I Almost Do. And maybe the reason she didn't include this one is because they do kind of fit together in an interesting way, but it's kind of like what you were saying, I bet I almost do, was like written right after the breakup, whereas I Bet You Think About Me might have been written like further out from it.
When she realized what a joke he is.
So I love it. I think it's very fun, very
There's
playful.
Also a ton of connections between I Bet You Think About Me and the 10 Minute All Too Well, for sure.
Yes. Yep. And what was I going to say? Oh, it sounds a lot like Betty.
Oh, yeah.
Like Betty. It might
but
just
Aaron
be the...
Dessner produced it, right?
Yeah. I don't know if it's just the harmonica that gives it that Betty sound, or if it's... I almost feel like it's a similar melody, too.
Yeah.
It just reminds me a lot of Betty, which isn't a bad thing.
What's the next song?
Yes, the next song is Forever Winter.
I really don't have that much to say about this one.
Yeah, I can't speak to this one too much because I think I only listened to it once. It's just, like, very sad. I didn't have the desire to go back to it, I think, which is what we talked about a little bit in our last episode, where there are those songs of Taylor's where no one can deny that they're beautiful and they're, you know, great songs, but...
Same with Ronin.
Yeah, they're just songs that, for me, I don't particularly love listening to really sad songs like that. I know some people do, but for me, I don't. So something like Soon You'll Get Better, Ronin, Epiphany, it kind of falls into that camp for me where it's just really kind of sad and I don't have a desire to listen to it.
I really like the instrumentation on this one.
Yeah, me too.
It's really, really beautiful. And the isn't there a line about I'll be your summer sun? Or yeah. I'll be the summer sun for you forever.
Too young to know gets better. I'll be summer sun for
you
forever.
Yeah, that's a beautiful
forever
line.
Winter if you go.
It's just very, very sad, but...
And this was produced by Jack Antonoff.
His laugh is a symphony. When the lights go out, it's hard to breathe. I pull at every thread, trying to solve the puzzles in his head. Live my life scared to death. He'll decide to leave instead.
It's very sad, which we kind of predicted. I mean, the title kind of gave that away, I would say, Forever Winter. I don't think the subject matter is what we predicted necessarily.
No, we predicted it would be about her birthday party, because that happened in winter.
Yeah, or just the idea that... Like, losing, or not losing in the sense of, like, actually losing, but, like, breaking
something
up.
Something sad that happens that left a permanent mark on you, basically.
And we kind of thought it would be about a breakup, I think. But yeah. It doesn't seem to be that, or that doesn't seem to be the case. It seems to be about something else. So we got that wrong. Are we ready to move on to the next track, which is Run, featuring Ed Sheeran?
This song is so pretty.
Yes, I would say this is my favorite Vault track.
Yeah, it's just a very... I'm not, you know, too thrilled about the lyrics or anything like that. None of that really stands out to me, but it's just very pleasant to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very relaxing.
Yeah, it does. You can for sure hear Ed Sheeran's influence in this one.
Oh,
it
yeah.
sounds a lot like some of his earlier music, so the music he was making around the time that he and Taylor wrote this one, which is very, like, fall-esque to me. I wish that I had this for the beginning of fall, but it's definitely good for, like, I don't know, I just get fall vibes from it, I would say. And I just think it's cute. It's very sweet. It's very innocent.
Yeah. You can, it's... Really nice to hear, because you can hear their vocal chemistry, and you could tell when they were recording it, they were both very happy to finally be bringing it to life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just, you could feel their love for each other while they're singing it.
I think my favorite part is when they say,
don't say no. No.
Yeah, I just, sure. I love the melodies. It's really beautiful, and like I said, it's very cute, and I don't know, it's just like... puppy love.
It's almost like you can hear them smiling while they're singing it.
Yeah. It's just like a, I don't know, it's a feel-good song to me. I smile when I listen to it. I think it's so pretty. And as much as we did say that we were, like, slightly disappointed Ed Sheeran was a feature on the Vault track, just because he was already in Everything Has Changed, and he was in Endgame, so we were like, I kind of wish that she had worked with someone different, but I do... think that she made a good choice, and it's a really good song, and I think he sounds great on it, and it's my favorite one. So the next one is The Very First Night.
Yeah, this used to be my number one favorite, but now I Bet You Think About Me has eclipsed it.
Mm-hmm.
But this song is honestly such a bop. It's so good.
Yeah. This one, to
me, it just makes you happy, and it makes you want to dance, and, yeah.
This one, to me, also kind of has that, I mean, other than the they don't know about the night in the hotel part, I almost feel like Run and The Very First Night might be about the same person. I don't know. I feel like there are similar themes running through those two songs, where it's kind of like, it almost sounds like a secret relationship where it's like they don't know about the night in the hotel.
Pardon me, because when I first listened to this song and she said they don't know about the night in the hotel, I was like, are you kidding? What? Like, it was kind of risque for Taylor at the time. Do you think that's like one of the reasons she held back on it?
I don't know. I think part of it might be that. I feel like this song, The Very First Night, was probably written at the end of the writing process for Red, because I definitely get very strong 1989 vibes from it. So I feel like more so she left it off probably because the sound just didn't really go with Red than the subject matter. But I do think maybe part of the reason was the night in the hotel line might have been a little bit, I don't know.
I love when she sings Polaroid Picture. I don't know why. That's another part that's addicting to listen to.
Yeah. And it is just so fun how there are certain themes, there are certain things that you can just trace through all of Taylor's music that just come up again and again. Polaroid Pictures being one of those things.
Kitchen. And
yeah, just, like, kitchen dancing. Just, there are, like, certain things that she loves to mention. And I just think, I don't know, it's so fun to sort of see those things pop up here and there. Because you're like, oh, Polaroid Picture. That's a Taylor Swift song for sure.
And I agree with you that this one was probably written right at the end of the Red writing process, especially with the Polaroid.
Mm-hmm.
Like, obviously, that's so 1989.
Yeah, I wonder if there was ever any discussion about putting this song, The Very First Night, on 1989.
Maybe.
Because I feel like it would have went pretty well with that album.
Especially the line, back then we didn't know we were built to fall apart.
Yeah.
And in Out of the Woods,
there
we
were built to
fall apart and fall back together, so.
Yeah, there are a lot of themes on this song that are similar to 1989, and they weren't riding in the car when we both fell. We think about the car.
Style.
Yeah, connected back to style. And then, of course, like we said, the Polaroid picture.
Which is also Out of the Woods.
Yes. Yeah. Just like a lot of themes from 1989. So I wonder if she thought about putting it on there. Okay, so the last song, probably the most
anticipated and talked about.
Yes, the song that made the biggest impact for everyone, not just fans of Taylor, is, of course, the All Too Well 10-minute version, which Taylor has been talking about for years. People were never really sure if it existed. And then we have it now. Let's first talk about, I think we already kind of covered this, but let's just recap it. There are a lot of discussions, debates, if you will, going on about whether this song was completely written 10 years ago, or about 10 years ago, or if there were perhaps some tweaks made recently, or if all of the extra material was written recently. What do you think about that, Emily?
Yeah, so it's kind of like what you said earlier. I think that she definitely went in with all these vault tracks and cleaned up some of the lyrics and probably added a few or tweaked an original lyric and maybe added a word or two.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing, I kind of do believe that Fuck the Patriarchy was in there, because I was reading that, I believe she wrote this with Liz Rose, and she said back in 2011, 2012, that it did say the F word.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of do buy that that line was always in there. But
yeah.
I don't know, the whole thing, the punchline goes, I'll get older, but your lovers stay my age. I believe he was always dating women that were older than him,
he
or
being
his
Jake
age.
Gyllenhaal.
So, unless, like you said earlier, unless Taylor's a fortune teller, I don't know. Unless she just knew that was a pattern in Hollywood where, like, older men are dating early women in their early 20s. I don't know.
Yeah. I probably am of the belief, like you said, she could have added that line, that whole line. I think my idea of what happened is she had all these lyrics for All Too Well, and she pieced together the version that we know and love, but then she had a bunch of extra lyrics that she just had to cut. And I think she kind of pieced together those lyrics. She put them in the original song, and this is what we have now. And maybe some of the lines that she came up with back then, like, didn't completely fit, so she tweaked a few things here and there. That's kind of what I think happened, because she has said in the past, she just has, like, all these lines written down that she wants to include in songs. Like, I remember she talked about that in the Folklore Long Pond session, the Meet Me Behind the Mall. She really loved that line and wanted to include it in a song one day. So I think that's probably what happened. Like, she had to cut all this material. And then when she went to create the 10-minute version, she kind of did a patchwork of all those old lyrics and maybe added some new ones, tweaked some things. I think that seems to...
A lot of the new lyrics are just so good. Yes. Like, some of her best songwriting ever, I think. Like, I was thinking on... I think this is probably my favorite part. I was thinking on the drive down, anytime now he's gonna say it's love, you never called it what it was, till we were dead and gone and buried. It's so good.
It just, like, moves. I don't know. Again, I'm not
that
into music, but just the quality of the song is so addicting, I think, where it just, like, keeps going. It just, like, keeps moving, and it keeps pushing forward. Like, there's never...
Because you just want to keep hearing her roast him. Like,
yeah. There's never a lull. Like, the lyrics just, like, you're just, like, keep pushing forward to the end.
Yeah, and in our Vault Track episode, I predicted that it could be, like, Venice Bitch by Lana Del Rey, which is a little bit of singing here and there, but huge musical interludes. But no, this one is packed with lyrics for sure.
It is. And there is a solid, like, what, 1 or 2 minutes of outro at the end. But for the most part, it is filled with lyrics. And there's probably at least a good 3 minutes extra of new lyrics, which is definitely delivering on what she promised. I like the part where she says she's in the party bathroom, some actress asking her what happened. She was,
you.
That's what happened.
You. And I love the way she sang that part on SNL. Like, her face was so scared.
Oh my gosh, her SNL performance was crazy. She was, like, so expressive. I always love when she does that.
And then the part, they say all's well that ends well, but I'm in a new hell every time you double-cross my mind. You said if we had been closer in age, maybe it would have been fine, and that made me want to die.
Yes.
That might be her most angsty lyric ever.
Yeah, it's definitely very angsty, which is fun. Angsty Taylor's always the best.
And that's why, like, something like that, I was like, of course she wrote that when she was 22. Like, that made me want to die. That's so... It's just so... I don't want to say dramatic, because I'm sure that's how she felt in the time, but it's very much something you would say when it's one of your first relationships.
Mm-hmm. Which is actually... like, so funny to think about. So, whoever this song's about, most people believe it's Jake Gyllenhaal. So he's saying, maybe this would have worked if we were closer in age. So, like, basically implying if you were older, maybe this would have worked.
And it's so gross because he knew that's something that she can't change. So it was probably hard for her to hear that, because if it was something that she could change, a lot of people would be like, oh, I can change, like, I can... But it's like, no, if we were closer in age, like, you can't change your age.
Well, I wasn't even really thinking about that. I was more going to talk about the connection to Nothing New, where it's like, at 22, Taylor feels like she's already, like, irrelevant. She's already, like, too old. She's aged out. But yet, when you compare her age to Jake Gyllenhaal at the time, like, he was much older than her. Like, oh, if you were older, this could have worked. But then it's like, that just must have been so confusing, because it's like, I feel like I'm really old and, like, I'm irrelevant and I'm done, but yet I'm way younger than you, and now you're like, you should be older. So just like the age connection to me is kind of interesting. And it just sounds like, and especially like you said, there are parallels between this song and I Bet You Think About Me, where even though at the time Taylor was so successful, like already breaking records, already like so critically acclaimed and so popular, so famous at the time, and obviously even more so now, and yet she was made to feel so small and so like silly and stupid, which is just crazy to think that someone like her could be made to feel that way.
Yeah, it's like in I Bet You Think About Me, you laugh at my dreams, roll your eyes at my jokes.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, ew. And then I love the line, it's supposed to be fun turning 21, because obviously it relates perfectly to the moment I knew.
Mm-hmm.
Which we've known forever that was about her 21st birthday.
And that line kind of makes the song 22, it kind of comes full circle.
Yeah.
Like, why turning 22 is such a big deal and why it was so fun and, like, a big moment for Taylor, because her 21st birthday, I guess, was ruined.
Yep.
Which is sad. But then she turned 22 and she was happy and she was free, but she was also confused and also lonely.
So, is that all you have to say about that song?
I think so. There's way, way more that we could say, but I think we'll leave it here for now.
And just the SNL performance of that was incredible. It's something that will definitely go down in SNL history, because only a few artists have been able to do a song that long.
Mm-hmm.
It's just one of those moments where when I was watching it, I was like, oh, this is going to be history. And the fact that it got to number one on the Hot 100 is an incredible feat, because it's mm-hmm. the longest song ever, and especially in the streaming age, a lot of people have been like, oh, people's attention spans are getting so much less, like, you need to do as short of a song as possible in order to chart.
Mm-hmm.
But it shows you, if you have enough name recognition and enough, like, push and marketing behind you that Taylor does, that you can get a song, and not to mention talent.
Yeah, I was gonna say,
amazing songwriting.
It's not just that, it's a good song. And
yeah,
I guess my final thought about it will be that I find it amazing and just a testament to her talent, really, that this is a 10-minute song and it does not feel 10
and
minutes.
It's 10 years old.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even a single.
But what I'm saying, it's like, it just does not feel like it's 10 minutes. It goes by in a flash. Like,
it flows perfectly.
It definitely is not laborious to get through. All right, so now I think we just need to break down her records that she's broken just for a minute, because gotta give her the credit she deserves. So Taylor Swift, we already mentioned this, she's the first artist in history to debut a song and album. Okay, we didn't mention this. She's the first artist in history to debut a song and album at number one on the Hot 100 and Billboard 200 simultaneously on three occasions. Her All Too Well 10-minute version is officially the longest Hot 100 number one hit of all time, which we've mentioned. She has now earned a milestone 30 top 10 hits on the Hot 100, tying Michael Jackson for the fifth most in history. She breaks the record for most simultaneous entries by a female artist in Hot 100 history, which is 26, which is what we said. 26 songs off of Red entered the Hot 100 at the same time. She extends her record as the female artist with the most entries in Hot 100 chart history, which is 164. So she's just, like, breaking all the records all the time. I wonder how many times, if anyone has ever counted this, that she broke her own record. Because she's been doing that a lot lately, which is kind of what we're saying. It's just a testament to her talent that she's been at this for as long as she has, and she's continuing to just break her own records, to break new records. She is a powerhouse, to put it lightly.
And she is the music industry. And with that, we'll leave you with that.
Yes. We have a few more episodes coming up this month, still focusing on Red, and we look forward to those. In the meantime, bye.
Bye. Thank you.